Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Hi, Carol. Thank you for calling.
Yep.
This must be so bewildering for you, so terrible. All the death and destruction you witnessed tonight. You have our deepest condolences. And to say it again, you are in no danger. You are perfectly safe.
Okay.
Your life is your own.
There's no more scary phrase than you are perfectly safe. That's Pluribus, new episodes every Friday on Apple TV Plus. James Dempsey's with us once again. Afternoon, James.
Good afternoon.
So would it be fair to say Apple is getting good at doing these kind of sci-fi things?
I think sci-fi really has found its home in Apple. Obviously, the single greatest attribute that Apple brings to its TV productions is money. Right?
Yeah.
In that it is one of the most successful, if not the most successful companies in the world. So it has deep pockets and it clearly has a vested interest in keeping us hooked to our screens through content. And why not plow some money into that? And this is a very intriguing show because perhaps the big ticket name attached to it is Vince Gilligan. So he is best known as the writer and creator of Breaking Bad and the Breaking Bad extended Albuquerque universe, as in Better Call Saul and then El Camino as well. But before he sort of broke through with Breaking Bad, he wrote for The X-Files for many years, for seasons and seasons. Before that, he was just attempting to be a screenwriter. He wanted to write movies. And then he watched The X-Files one day and was so taken with it that he got his agent to kind of wrangle his way onto the show. And he wrote on it for something like 7 seasons and like wrote some of its best known episodes. And he has a love of science fiction in general. But to say that this is science fiction, it's kind of an, like, it is science fiction and it isn't.
Yeah.
It's science fiction in the sense that it is set in, you know, entirely on planet Earth. There are no, you know, laser guns or massive things of technology. It's kind of small scale science fiction.
This is kind of like Severance in that
sure.
There's a concept.
There's a concept,
yes. But it's an unrecognizable world.
Agreed. Yeah. And I'm sort of, you know, it's kind of a poorly chosen TV show for this slot because the less you know about it going in, probably the more enjoyable it is. So I'm going to be skirting around a lot of things here. But I think it's safe to say that, you know, the clip that is pulled essentially from the trailer there sees our lead character, Carol Sturka. She's played by Ray Seahorn, who is of the, you know, Breaking Bad Albuquerque extended universe. She played Kim in Better Call Saul, was nominated for an Emmy twice. It's actually worth noting that Better Call Saul has the record, dubious that it is, for having the most Emmy nominations and not a single win in the primetime categories at over 50 nominations across its 6 seasons. And you could imagine, so when Gilligan was finishing writing up Better Call Saul, anyway, he had this idea for a show that was going to be about a lead male character who, after some event, everyone in the world falls in love with. And that's not exactly what this is, but it's kind of, you can see the teeth of it in this. And when he was watching Ray Seahorn perform in Better Call Saul, he was so taken with her face acting in that in the editing room, he found that he could remove lines of her dialogue really easily because she was able to just carry scenes
with her face.
With her face,
that's a skill, yeah.
And that is very much what you get here because, you know, this is a show where there could be 5 to 7 to 8 minutes without any dialogue. I mean, it's, you know, he always loved Gilligan kind of framing processes in his shows, right? Like Breaking Bad is obviously about, you know, this chemistry teacher who goes rogue and starts producing drugs. And a lot of, you know, some of the episodes are about, you know, have these long extended sequences where Walter White is cleaning Petri dishes or whatever, right?
Yeah, well,
not
Petri,
whatever. A lot of equipment, we'll say. Yeah. And here we get something very similar because this is a show, I don't think it'll count as a spoiler, where our lead character, Carol, it becomes very isolated on Earth against all of the other population. And because all of the other population exist within this paradigm, there's no speaking between them because they're able to navigate the Earth without speaking. And she is this misanthropic author. She writes kind of romanticy, this kind of like, okay, you know, fantasy, yeah, romantic stuff. But she really has aspirations to be a great writer, but it's not that she's not a great writer, it's that she doesn't think she is a great writer. She has fans, she is success, she's published countless novels in this series about a pirate, and there's probably a bit of bonking and bodice ripping and all that kind of stuff, but she feels that this is beneath her. And when we meet her, she's very conflicting character because she's a total and utter misanthrope. And then when the event, capital E, happens halfway through the first episode and leads to this incredibly unusual, you know, pilot episode that is kind of it's kind of like, what if, you know, the opening episode of another HBO zombie type show was like much calmer, but exactly the same things were happening, right? Mm. Like, it is this big, bold, brash, incredibly acted thing in which there's only one character. So the whole thing is I found it kind of like magnetic. It's the kind of show that you cannot second screen during, right?
Okay.
Because there's no dialogue, so you are like, put it this way. I mean, of course I was second screening. I'm a millennial, right? So what else would I be doing? And I like, your brain eventually triggers that, like, you haven't heard anybody speaking in enough time.
Yeah, you look up.
You look up and then you get completely wrapped up in what's happening. Now, it is intercut by these brilliantly humorous moments of black comedy as well. Like, this is not, it is a show that could be absolutely miserable, and yet it is punctuated by these brilliant visual jokes and really pithy writing. There's two episodes released so far of 9, but Apple won a bidding war for this and it was ordered for 2 seasons, so we know we're getting at least 2 seasons of it. The second episode really further, you know, it propels things along an awful lot, and has this fantastic sequence involving the city of Bilbao that I won't go into more than that because it's spoiler territory, right? I'll be able to talk about it much more fully in season 2, put it that way, when I feel like enough time has elapsed for, you know, to kind of break the spoiler territory. But this is so interesting and so funny and so well acted and completely different to anything I've ever seen before, yet touching many of the kind of typical, you know, touching other kind of sci-fi things we've seen before, in the case of The Last of Us or 28 Days Later, or but not zombies at the same, like, it is its own thing, and I'm really, really interested to see where he takes it. And it is grounded by this absolutely star-making turn by Rae Seehorn as this misanthropic woman who, you know, might be the last hope for humanity, quote unquote.
Right, okay. And if she's the last hope, is it pretty much her all the time? Are there other characters who feature here, given that everyone else is on the other side of this?
So we learn, and I don't think this quote qualifies as a spoiler, so sorry. If you think it is and you're not driving a car, stick a finger in your ear for a second. But basically, we find out in the second episode that out of the 8 billion people, there are 12 human beings to whom this has not happened.
Right, okay.
And there is a meeting between them that does not go as planned, and it is really, really, really funny.
Okay, right, like a Zoom meeting. Hello, how can we save the world? Right, okay, that sounds very interesting. Our next show is Battle of the Irish Dancers. It's on Wednesday at 9 p.m. on Sky Arts, or you can stream on Now TV. Here's a clip.
I love that piece. Me too. So one of the things that we like to do here in the studio is film the dancers as they're performing different dances, because as much as corrections I can give them, until they see themselves performing, it kind of doesn't take effect, or the corrections don't take effect as much.
Okay. This kind of thing, to work, you need Jeopardy, you need, you know, I'm going to get that bitch kind of stuff, you know. Is there any of that in it?
There are no bitches in it, unfortunately. Yeah, yeah. Right? So the Jeopardy, I guess, comes from the fact that actually what struck me the most about watching it is I sort of compared Irish dancing as like an institution to, you know, the GAA or athletic games in the Irish vein, right? Like, one is absolutely celebrated the world over, and like, we, you know, acknowledge that there are GAA clubs in every major capital in the world and how incredible it is, this organization. And none of that, like, I don't mean to detract from that at all. It is an incredible organization. But then if you were to compare it to Irish dancing, which equally has this massive worldwide following and has schools all over the world and follows a specific code in terms of the style of the dance and how it has evolved over time, etc. I don't think it gets its just desserts in terms of praise, because it is a massive thing. And is that probably because it's usually, or it is typically associated with women and young girls? Well, that's for someone else to unpack, right? Now, this is a three-part documentary that follows a number of dancers up to the World Championships, which took place in Dublin this year. And as you said, a documentary like this sort of lives and thrives when there is jeopardy. Now, they need to find a way to introduce jeopardy. And ultimately, for me, the biggest single problem it has as a documentary is everybody's really nice. Right?
Oh, God. Like, I hate that. Yeah.
So we heard in the clip there, Niall Holly, who runs a dance academy here in Dublin. He is sort of, we follow it in three cities. So we follow two dancers in Dublin, Owen and Ella, who are, we'll say, adult dancers. Owen is leading up to his swan song appearance at the World Championships. And Ella had finished sixth the year before, and the top five are like sort of the medal winners. So she was just outside of the top five. Then we also have a school in Birmingham. That's that's headed by Carl and Patricia Scanlon. And we have three dancers there, but they're all talking about how good friends they are and how they support each other. And nobody's throwing pearls down the stairs. And then we follow another school in Newcastle, where we have a duo. They're the youngest pair. I think they're only 13. Their names are Maria and Saoirse. And again, they are really good friends, right?
Okay.
So nobody's pulling ringlets out of anyone's hair or wigs off, etc., etc., that you would be kind of hoping to see. Now, then, how does the documentary live and breathe, right? What it does is it showcases, I think, the incredible athleticism of this dancing, right?
Okay.
In the sense that, obviously, there's a very particular style to it. You are not allowed to move your upper body at all. It is all about maintaining a constant smile on your face and moving your legs throughout the soft shoe and the hard shoe, and then a return if you get called back for your return. But perhaps what doesn't work as a documentary is we're following these five dancers, or six dancers rather, but they're all competing in roughly the same competition, as in they're at different levels in terms of age, but they're all doing the same kind of thing in each thing. So it gets a little bit repetitive on that part. As well, this is particularly prevalent in the first episode. It's intercut by these sort of interstitial dance bits where that look like, you know, a little vignette from Fame, where they have the various dance schools outside in public spaces in their cities dancing. And like, it's not that I don't admire their dancing, but I'm admiring their dancing when I'm watching them competing. I don't know if I necessarily needed the 10 to 15 times this happens throughout the three episodes of the documentary. What it does make a very good case for is the kind of jeopardy that comes from injury, right? So Niall Holly, who we heard in the clip there, he talks about how he won the World Championship, and then he was approached by Lord of the Dance, and then he ended up dancing in, I think it was Disneyland or Universal Studios or one of the, you know, Orlando theme parks, and how one night he's there dancing and then he hears his hamstring rip, and that's it, the end of his career.
Ouch.
And it's this idea of the kind of ephemeral quality of this kind of physical activity, where you are pounding, you know, your legs against the hard floor every single day for years and years and years and years. The physical toll that takes on your body, and how it can all just go in this, you know, in a second if your hamstring just goes at that time, you know, for whatever reason. And that is perhaps the most exciting part of the documentary, as in, is this person's career just going to be over in a heartbeat? And then how do you react to that? How do you bounce back from that? That's a more interesting documentary, which we don't get. But what I will say here is you do get a sense of the Irish dancing community, right? That they are very supportive, very caring. I told you last week that the knitting community are not like that. When I was complaining about Tom Daly, let me tell you, they had things to say all week about that show, right? whereas here I get a sense that while Irish dancing is competitive and people want to win, definitely there seems to be this community of caring and loving, and maybe I'm completely wrong, maybe it is more cutthroat, but that's not what I got to see in this documentary. This documentary presented schools that really care for their students, that support each other, that lift each other up, and a win for one is a win for all. And you know, that was kind of hopeful to see.
Yeah, but the story arc, if you like, across the three episodes is at the World Championships. It's about how everybody does.
Essentially, it's about qualifying, getting your place there, and then what happens when you get there.
Okay, right. Our third show is Death by Lightning. You can stream all episodes now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
I feel in my core that I really do know you, Mr. Garfield. I'm your man. Help me.
Sorry?
Help me to succeed. like you did. Open the door.
There you go. That's death by lightning. Now, I suppose you'd probably better explain who James Garfield was, because, you know, he was what?
Yeah. So James Garfield was the 20th president of the United States of America in the 19th century. He is known, he's sort of remembered as a footnote in history because he was elected, he was inaugurated, then 3 months later he was shot. And then I think 2 months after being shot, he finally succumbed to his injuries after, this is not a spoiler, I mean, it was a long time ago, after he actually should have survived the gunshot. It was sepsis that ultimately killed him and bad medicine and medical practices that killed him. And this is a documentary, or sorry, it was a drama rather, sorry, about him, played by Michael Shannon, and his murderer, his assassin, Charles Guiteau, who's played by Matthew McFadden, best known, obviously, for Succession. It also stars Betty Gilpin as his wife and a bunch of other character actors that you would see. Now, it is a very well-made and beautifully brief show. There's only 4 episodes in it. And it's, I guess the thing about Garfield is he is mostly known simply for having died this excruciatingly undignified death that he completely didn't deserve and is a footnote in history because of that. And Guiteau is only perhaps remembered in the Stephen Sondheim musical Assassins, which is about people who tried to kill presidents, right? Other than that, nobody knows his name. But they have created this very brief 4-episode miniseries that really paints Garfield as what a president he might have been. As in, he was this softly spoken man from Ohio who was never meant to be president. Something happens at the convention that sort of sees him propelled to a stardom that he wasn't expected. And then it paints his journey to success against Guiteau, who is a man who struggles with his own mental health, his history with his family, his own aspirations to be something great and yet never quite managing to achieve it. He's like an original Stan, to use, you know, modern parlance of problematic fans who love you too much. And he meets Garfield several times throughout his life and is absolutely bang behind him until something happens that makes him change his mind. And all in, I thought it was handsomely made. It was both funny and irreverent at times. It has a great supporting cast. So Betty Gilpin is fantastic as the First Lady, Lucretia Garfield, she's better known as Creed. Shea Whigham, who is a character actor that you would know from a million things but you may not recognise. Bradley Whitford of The West Wing. And Nick Offerman, particularly, probably, you know, best known as Ron Swanson in Parks and Recreation, he plays Chester Arthur, who was the vice president, who was a no gooden, shall we say, who done well in the end. All in, what I loved, like, this is a terrible thing to say, what I loved about it was only 4 parts, right? Like, as in, it didn't feel in any way stretched beyond anything unnecessary. It is a little perhaps hagiographic towards Garfield, as in what an incredible man he was. You know, I just have to take them at their word, shall we say? I mean, I don't know, I have much
but
to go
this
on.
This is not a fictionalised account of what might have happened if he hadn't been assassinated.
No.
This is just the dry facts
this
of
is,
his life.
This is just like, here's who he is. Let me start that again. Here's who he is. Here's what he did. Here's how he died.
Yeah.
But it's very well made for what it is, and you can burn through it in 2 nights.
I'd say Bradley Whitford must be really fecked off at this stage of the game. It's like, anybody makes anything to do with American politics, let's get Bradley Whitford apart.
Yo, he's grown out his beard and he looks very stately. What can I say?
That's a killer. Also, someone says they watched because you were saying that Pluribus that does a long periods not speaking. Someone says they just watched it on the app. I play it at fast speed so I can skip forward regularly. Somebody else wonders, Rhea Seahorn, maybe she might get the Emmy this time.
I would say that this could be a real buzzy breakthrough show, so yeah, definitely.
Okay, that's it. You can put your money on that now, and if you lose money, it's James Dempsey's fault. Those 3 shows are Pluribus, new episodes every Friday at Apple TV Plus, Battle of the Irish Dancers, that's on Wednesdays at 9 p.m. on Sky Arts, so you can stream on Now TV, and Death by Lightning, you can stream all episodes now on Netflix. James, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger fuel centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.